Soulful. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, and we bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And today, I have an author who sent me a reply when we approached her about sharing her books with us, and she wrote, "You know I'm an erotic romance author, right? Because for some, this seems to be an issue." Well, obviously, I don't care, because she's with us right now, and she is Anita Cox, a best-selling author of a growing number of novels. For over 10 years, she's written contemporary, erotic, and paranormal romances via traditional, independent, and audio publishers. An only child born and raised in the Midwest, Anita enjoyed reading novels as a way to occupy herself and set her imagination free. That propensity blossomed into creations of her own as she began crafting novels, and as she matured, she began writing more adult tales and donned the pen name of Anita Cox. Anita resides in Indiana with the last teenager in her herd, a fluffy, not fat cat named Tommy Chong, Titan, the English Mastiff, and the husband that helped create her creative pen name. And in her free time, Anita enjoys fishing, gardening, and devouring equal portions of strong coffee and well-written novels. And I'm looking forward to learning more. So let's get going. Welcome to the show, Anita.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, gosh, it's our pleasure. And Anita, I love the description of your cat, fluffy, not fat.
You know, the first bath I gave him, I discovered how not fat he was. I mean, he's got a little tummy, but he's mostly poof.
He's mostly poof. I love it. I care for 11 feral cats myself. And when they got their winter coat this past winter, it was their first winter that they've been here. My husband kept telling me that I was overfeeding them, and I just insisted it was their winter coat. So now now I'll have to use your line next year. I'm going to say, "Hey, Bob, they're fluffy, not fat."
Exactly. You know, and there's nothing wrong with spoiling your felines.
I know. He says to me, "I'm Italian, and so that's why I overfeed them. Hey, eat a little something." Oh my gosh. Anyway, cats out of the way and no heavy breathing English mastiffs. I know our listeners would have loved that. But anyway, you write erotic romance, some paranormal, some sci-fi, which is coming soon, and some straight-up erotica. And my question is, why?
Well, before I started as Anita Cox, I wrote a lot of suspense and mystery novels, and there was always a romantic element, and I would have to, during edits, really cut back and tone down on the sex scenes. Because for a lot of people who are reading something that they're not expecting to see that and can be shocked by it. And, you know, I wasn't really thinking that's where I should go. But then one day my husband said, you know, when I was sitting there scratching out line after line after line, he says, "Why don't you just write the stuff?" I mean, he goes, like, "Don't all you girls read this?" And I threw something at him for generalizing all women and putting us all in one pot. But then I started thinking about it. And he was right, you know, like, why try to, you know, put a square peg into a round hole? Just seriously, it's I like the genre, many people do, and so I split my other name with Anita Cox and started writing the stories and not having to cut back on the romantic element really kind of set me free, and it's a lot easier now for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, if that's what came naturally, it was kind of hard for you, I'm sure, to squelch that. And so you might as well go with what flows, right?
It was, and it was a little bit of a challenge, you know, because my parents have always read everything I've written. And when they wanted to read the first erotica series that I wrote, I was very nervous about handing it over. And I told them, I'm like, "Look, you know, this is what it is. If you're not comfortable reading it, you know, just don't read it."
Right.
And they loved it. They absolutely loved it. And they would tell me what they loved about the stories. And we would kind of skim over the whole sex topic because it's my parents.
Right.
But, you know, they've been very supportive over the years. And I'm just fortunate to have people who constantly push me and challenge me to keep going.
Well, see, now they're mom and dad approved. You can't beat that.
Yeah. And it again, it's still, it gets a little awkward sometimes when they're talking about the stories, because it's my parents, and I should know, as open as I am, that that came from somewhere. But, yeah.
Yeah, still, I think we can all relate to that.
Right.
I do. Now, you mentioned that Anita Cox is your pen name, and your husband came up with that. How did that all come about?
Well, I told him I needed to come up with a different name so that I didn't confuse the brands, and he went to work that day. He's a union laborer, and on his breaks, he started texting me ideas, and a lot of them were already taken. And every idea he sent me, I mean, I just spent the entire day laughing. I really did. You know, he's a man, and he has the sense of humor of a 12-year-old boy, so I was getting a lot of, like, Camille Toe and all kinds of just silly things. And Anita Cox was the very last text message he sent me, and it just had me laughing because, you know, you have to read it out loud to kind of get it. And I looked up the domain, and it was available, and I said, it's mine.
That is so funny. When my kids were growing up, I would make lunchbox names like Rita Book or Lisa Carr, and I would put that on their lunch bags every day so they had a different name. And so when I told my older daughter, I Facebooked her, I said, oh, I have an interview with an erotic author, and her name is Anita Cox. And so she Facebooks me back, Mom, you do know what that means. And then she put, we could start a whole new line of lunch bag names.
Oh, yeah, and it's funny because I just had last month, it was at the North Iowa Book Bash, and I won a free table for the next year, and they had to announce my name as the winner, and the author behind me was also an erotic author. She leaned back, and she said, I just love hearing her say your name out loud.
Oh, I thought it was perfect, just perfect. Well, now, how many books have you written?
Eight that are published. And then I have another three that are in edits.
Okay. So you are fairly prolific.
I try. It's difficult, you know, with the family life and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Going, you know, at a decent clip anyway.
No. So do you write full-time or do you have another job?
I wrote full-time until last year. And then the daughter needed braces. And I started looking at my retirement account and decided that until Amazon settles and stops changing everything, it would probably be best for me to go back to work for a while. So right now it's not full-time.
Okay. And your coworkers know of your writing?
Yeah. And my boss actually just found out, which was interesting, to say the least.
Well, we won't go there. How's that?
Okay.
Take us then inside your mind when you created the series Dirty White Candy.
Well, I had actually knew a woman who had been divorced, and really her experiences had been very limited. She'd married the high school sweetheart, and it was just very boring, very vanilla sex, and it was never surrounded about her and her needs. And when she started dating, you know, people get older, they get a little bit more experienced. She was having a lot of, you know, bad luck. I'll just put it that way. People were, her dates were not as excited about her skill level. And I thought, well, you know, what if it was different? For her, what if she actually learned and got to have new experiences and open her eyes? And so I wrote book one, and after it was published, I sent it to her, and she's like, oh my God. She goes, does this stuff really happen? And I go, well, yeah, it really happens. And it, you know, you just have to open your mind and be open to some things. And it was just loosely based, the whole beginning scenario, on her demise of her marriage and the challenges that she was facing dating. And then, you know, the series continued on, basically. Just, it was all fictitious after that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really just, Dirty White Candy was just about one woman's sexual growth, and that, you know, just because you're maybe middle-aged and don't really know anything doesn't mean that we can't learn. I really do believe that sex education can continue to the end of our lives. I'm still learning stuff, and I'm going to be 40 this year. So, you know, there's education in and of itself, we should always be learning something every single day. That's what keeps us excited about things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sex is a very healthy and important part of our lives. And there's nothing wrong with continuing your education. Now, you don't have to do the crazy things that happen in the series, but, you know, there's actually a YouTube channel called Sexplanations that I watch a lot, and I talk about a lot and share a lot. And it's literally sex education online that you can watch and get answers to questions without having to have those difficult discussions.
Mm-hmm. See, that's interesting. As you were talking, I was trying to figure out, well, where would a middle-aged or an adult person, where would you go to get that kind of education?
There is, I mean, you have to be careful when you get online because you'll wind up on porn sites.
Some weird places, yeah.
But there is a plethora of information, and I landed on that YouTube channel, the Sexplanations, quite by accident. It was actually a nerd group that I was following that are very proud of being nerds, and that was a spinoff channel because they have some other educational channels. And I thought, wow, how interesting and how nice, because really the education that we get in school, at least that we got when I was in school, was, you know,
nothing
horrific.
Yeah.
And didn't really teach us much. I mean, no matter what your morals and values are as far as abstinence-only training or whatever, the point being is there are so many options and risks out there that we all need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. And here's a clinical doctor talking about these things openly and enthusiastically and explaining things that have been a mystery for so long. Mm-hmm. And that she actually gives a lot of resources and books that you can read and, you know, not fiction books, but, you know, books that you can read to educate yourself if, you know, if you're so inclined mm-hmm. to learn more about yourself and human sexuality in general.
Good. That's good to know. And it's interesting that your first book was really based on a real life person. Now, are there more books coming in that Dirty White Candy series, or are you done with that?
I actually just got the rights back. I had it published with another publisher, and I was very unhappy with the situation. So I just got the rights back. Trading Places just came back to me, which is book 3 in the series. So that's about to be republished, and then I will continue on. I have some ideas for some other characters in the book, so I may add a few more to the series.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you also have a series called The Shifter Chronicles. Tell us about that.
There is a shakeup in the shifter world. Their hierarchy had basically kind of went to the wayside. There was some wars that had taken place, and they went and found the girl who had been hidden away because she was the last of the royal bloodline. And really, she had been drugged to keep her from shifting, and her grandmother lied to her. She had no idea she was a shifter at all. So when her grandmother dies, about around the same time that her pack finds her, and she's being hunted basically by other packs because the royals, the royal bloodlines of the different shifters, have a few more powers than regular shifters. They're a little bit larger, stronger, and they have some extra abilities. So they're hunting her because these other packs are hunting her because they basically want to breed her and get that bloodline in their packs.
Mm, okay.
But her home pack finds her and saves her, and she has to adjust to this whole new lifestyle. And then, you know, when they stop the, you know, have her stop the drug therapy, and she actually shifts for the first time, it's, you know, she thinks this is all hocus pocus, whatever. She's just still kind of, you know, in mourning and kind of shocked about her grandmother's death and all the lies over the years. And as the series continues, you get to meet some of the other shifter characters and other royals that end up coming out who have been in hiding. And you'll see everything from werewolves to werecats. I have centaurs in my books, fairies, vampires. I mean, it's kind of really the supernatural world. But they end up coming out of the closet and exposing themselves to the humans on purpose. And that's kind of where the series is at right now, with book 4 in the works. So it's interesting and exciting for me to develop this world where humans are being told that, you know, what you thought were fairy tales are not.
So. Oh, fun reading, huh?
I like the paranormal world. You're open up to a lot more.
Yes.
As far as, you know, creatively speaking.
Yep. And you also started an exciting new sci-fi series with Valkyrie Tales of the Asgard. Could you tell us about that?
I did. The Earth has changed quite a bit. They had visitors who had come, and the humans thought they were the saviors. They had given them a vaccine that basically ended everything. No more cancer, no more disease and sickness. So naturally, the human life extended a bit. But there was a side effect to the drug, and that was that fewer and fewer females were able to procreate. There were very few fertile females. So, as you can imagine, this really took women's rights and threw them down the drain. You're either a sex slave or, you know, a breeder. I mean, you really didn't. There was no falling in love and having happily ever after. So my main character, Vala, her mother decides that she's not going to accept that fate for her daughter and hides her. And years later, when she's supposed to come back and take care of her sister, the planet actually starts to have some devastation. Just as she finds her sister and rescues her, she's beamed aboard a ship, which nobody even knew aliens existed. So besides the Centurions, she's finding herself beamed aboard a ship. And that is where the Asgard had rescued as many humans as they could, as their home of Nibiru had collided with Earth. So the Asgard are very unhappy with the Centurions for interfering with the humans, because humans were a creation from the Asgard. And so there's a battle that ensues, and Vala finds a little bit of a love affair, which I don't want to get into too much.
Okay.
Give the book away. But Vala is more than she thinks she is. She's actually a very powerful woman. And she really does find her own and realizes that everything she's learned throughout her life was bringing her to this point.
So your storylines are quite varied as you're going through these three different series. Do you have a favorite book that you wrote?
Actually, right now, I really do. I really love Valkyrie. You know, Paranormal gave me a lot of creative leeway as far as creating the world and what shifters were like and what they were, you know, able to do. However, with the Asgard series, it's really, you know, this is a new planet, new species, new cultures. They are a polyamorous society, which is just considering how women were treated on Earth is brings a lot of internal conflict for a lot of the humans, because they're not used to seeing such a sexually free society. And that was a lot of fun. I spent a lot of time actually reading old folklore about Asgard, about the Fae, and the similarities were striking, so that gave me some more ideas, and I actually spent about 6 months doing research before I ever even did a storyboard for this series.
Interesting. I was going to ask you how much research goes onto that. So let's talk a little bit about your process. Do you write an outline? People go pantster or plotster. What's your preference?
I'm not so structured as an outline. The funny thing is I have an office because the second to the oldest child had moved out and this was her room. Before that, I was in the living room and I actually used to use a dry erase marker and my picture window to kind of plot things out and develop my characters before I would start writing, or as I would write, I would have a note and write it off to the side. And I was sitting in the picture window one day working, and a male guy, I caught him trying to read my notes, which would be backwards to him. And he didn't realize I was standing there. And when he looked up and saw me, he jumped and threw the mail, and he was really embarrassed.
He was looking for a spoiler, right?
He was. I think he was trying to figure out what I was doing. I'm sure my daughter used to tease me and call me Beautiful Mind, but, you know, it's how I work. I have a dry erase board in my office, and that's kind of how I plot things out. And I do kind of have, like, chapter, you know, outlines or ideas, but it's not as regimented as, say, an outline.
Okay. All right. And as far as your characters, so many authors tell me that their characters quickly take a life of their own and they kind of take off without permission. Do you find that as well?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes they have a mind of their own, and what I had planned for them to do, they start changing. And I try to crack the whip and put them back inside my box, but I find if I let them speak, I can fix any plot holes and edits. You know, it's why you do 5 or 6 rounds.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, you know, that it is nice for the creative process to just kind of let them go where they want to go. But that makes it a little bit of a challenge when you know how the book ends and what things are going to take place. And then their character reacts differently than how you expect. But what's frustrating is when I'm trying to do something else and they won't leave me alone, or I'm working on book A, but book C is talking to me. So sometimes I have projects that sit for a while because something else won't leave me alone.
Well, that's true. And then you could probably work on a couple simultaneously, I would imagine.
Yeah, last year I really started kind of allowing that to happen. I would try to stay focused. You know, I was kind of worried that I had ADD for a while.
No.
Because I would try so hard to stay focused on the story that I wanted to work on. And last year I kind of just started allowing whatever happens, happens. Now that a lot of times that means I have to, something set, and I have to go back to the beginning and read what I've written and take off from there. But
right, right. It's quite a process, quite a creative process that you really don't want to squelch. I mean, let it run where it goes, and then you can kind of clean it up afterwards, like bad kids.
Basically, yeah. A lot easier sometimes.
Well, now, how do you know when your books are done?
Once the conclusion has come and I'm satisfied that, because I hate cliffhangers. I read a lot. And cliffhangers actually make me angry. Like, I feel like I bought this book, I should get a resolution. So I try, even though I write series, I try my best to make sure that they have, my readers get a resolution in the book. There may still be, you know, a little bit of a question in the end, you know, that other people are potentially getting into a relationship, or somebody might be getting themselves in trouble. I try to never leave my readers feeling abandoned. You know, I want them to have an entire book, a question, and an answer. And if I have answered the question, then the book is done.
Okay.
If I haven't answered the question, then I've either A, I'm not done yet, or B, I failed and need to go back to the drawing board.
Exactly, and you need to know the difference.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, the writers who write serials, and people know what they're getting into. It's just when you're not expecting that cliffhanger, it's kind of a smack in the face, and I just don't want to do that to people, because I don't, you know, as a reader myself, and not everybody's like me, and I'm completely understanding with that, but I don't want somebody to finish one of my books and go, really?
Mm-hmm.
Now I got to wait however many months until she writes the next book, or now I got to buy another book just to get the original question answered.
Right, right.
I just, I feel like I owe people more than that. If they're going to spend their hard-earned money on my work, then I owe them something for that.
I get it. Do you hear much from your readers?
Yeah, I get a lot of, you know, emails or private messages on Facebook, and I love those. Those are the best.
Mm-hmm.
When the first time it happened, I literally started typing this long email back, and I'm like, what am I doing? This person's going to think I'm insane. But it was the first fan contact I'd ever had, so I edited it down to about a paragraph thanking them for taking the time to reach out and letting me know that they enjoyed my work, because mm-hmm. really, without fans, why would I do this?
You know, that's true. So what's the typical comments that you get from your readers?
In the Dirty White Candy series, I teach a reflexology trick on how to turn off the gag reflex. And it worked for her, which solved a problem in her marriage, because she was unable to do a certain thing because she would gag. And when she she read the line and she reread the line, and then she tried it using a pen and couldn't believe that it worked, and showed her husband. And I got an email the very next day that not only did she love the book, that she couldn't believe that I was giving tips and tricks to deal with some of the challenges. But, you know, like I said, I really took this as a learning in sexuality. That's the story. And I figured if I was going to have a series where I'm teaching sexuality, there should actually be a learning.
Mm-hmm. So what do you want your readers to get from reading your books?
More than anything, I want to give them an escape. Life is hard. Life is hard for a lot of people. It's, you know, stressful. We're being pulled in a million different directions. Our phones are ringing. Our emails are chiming. And to be able to unplug and escape into a different reality and enjoy that experience and get through the book and not feel, you know, like it was a challenge to get there, that's the ultimate goal. I want to give people an escape that they enjoy. I also, you know, if I can teach some things along the way, that's wonderful, because I just truly, I'm not even a teacher, but I love education.
Mm-hmm.
I love learning and feel excited when I've learned something new, and so I like to share that experience. And really, those two things are probably the most important for me.
Right, those are your driving forces. And I would imagine then that your cover art is extremely important to grab the reader initially, yeah?
Yes, it is. And with the Dirty White Candy series, that was kind of what had made me so unhappy when it was published elsewhere before was, you know, even during the process, I was begging for better cover art, and it was so boring, and it didn't give you any idea what the story was about whatsoever. Other than that there was a little bit of romance in there. And I really think that a dynamic cover or something that, you know, attracts the eye and grabs you, it's, you know, there's a reason they say don't judge a book by its cover. Well, for books, we absolutely judge them by their covers. Mm-hmm. What makes you want to open it up and turn to the next page?
And especially this genre, I would imagine.
And this genre is a challenge because, like with the Dirty White Candy series, yes, throughout the series, in the three books, there is a happily ever after. And there's a little bit of romance, but it's really not a romance. You know, it's more about a woman. And it's very difficult to have a book cover that's sexually charged or tell somebody this is a book that's, you know, a very erotic adult book without really kind of crossing the boundaries, like with the retailers, because they have community standards, and we have to, as authors, we have to understand, because anybody of any age can be online, and there's certain things that we don't want our children seeing, you know?
Right.
That's just, that's where we're at with the culture. You know, you go in other countries, the human breast is very well accepted. In the U.S., we still want our children not to see them. So as authors, when we're buying cover art or paying an artist, you know, we have to be very careful about the content that we're putting out. We don't want to cheapen our books, and we don't want to make it so obscure that no one can tell what it's about.
Yeah.
But it is a challenge because, you know, especially if there's not a romantic element in there, not to make it, you know, like a Playboy book, just not a good idea.
No, I get that. As I was looking at your covers, I was thinking about this. Wow, that must be difficult to come up with the appropriate cover that does what it needs to do and doesn't do what it shouldn't be doing. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, you want your books to have some class. I mean, your books are a representation of you unless and until someone meets you face to face. And that's your handshake. That book, that cover, that is your handshake.
Mm-hmm. Very well put. So what is next for Anita Cox?
Well, I just finished my very first BDSM, the first draft anyway. By the end of this year, you can expect to see book 4 of the Shifter Chronicles. And there is a the second book in the Asgard series. And then by the end of the year, I really think by the end of the year, there is a suspense piece that I'm co-writing with another author.
Oh, wow, how fun. Yeah. Well, now, is there anything that you'd like to talk about that we missed today?
I think, you know, like a public service announcement, just if you could spend the 2 minutes to write a sentence or two and review books when you get them, it's very important to authors, myself and others. Big names like James Patterson need reviews just as much as I do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a book, you don't have to write some long, you know, Reader's Digest version. Just a couple sentences saying you liked the book. It's really very important to us. The feedback means a lot to us. It means a lot on these websites like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And again, it doesn't have to be a long, even a paragraph. Just a few sentences about what you liked about the book really matters a lot.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. No one has ever mentioned that before. So I think that is extremely important. Thank you for bringing that up.
Oh, no problem.
Yes. So where can folks learn more about you and where can they purchase your books?
I'm on all major retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, All Romance, Google Play, and iBooks. You can learn more about me and my books at authoranitacox.com. That's C-O-X.
Okay.
And you can find me on Facebook.
Alrighty. So I encourage everyone to head over to your website, authoranitacox.com. Anita, what a pleasure to have you here today. I think you really shed some interesting and a different perspective on what it is you do, the genre that you write for, and I really appreciate your taking the time to do so. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.